Political analysts have long predicted that Latinos could shift U.S. politics to the left, giving Democrats a clear advantage. Nationwide, Latinos are now the largest non-white voting bloc in this year's election. Latinos, however, are not a monolithic voting group. There's a long history of support for the GOP. For instance, in 2016, Trump won 28% of the Latino vote. For more on this, we're joined now by Geraldo Cadava, author of The Hispanic Republican and professor of history at Northwestern University. Welcome.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
As I noted, the Latino vote has become nearly synonymous with the Democratic Party, but that's a recent change. In the 60s and 70s, there was actually a marked increase in Hispanic Republican voters. Why was that?
So, yeah, ever since 1972, Richard Nixon's reelection campaign, about a third of the Latino vote, a little less, a little more, has voted for the Republican president. And Richard Nixon was really the first Republican president to make a concerted effort to reach out to Latinos. It had to do with a lot of things. I would say that first, the Republican Party recognized that they were losing African-American voters and they needed to replace those lost votes, and Latinos were the prime targets. But Richard Nixon, coming from California, you know, claimed to have a background with Mexican-American communities southeast of Los Angeles, and he grew up near them, he said, and was familiar with them. And he made a commitment to recruiting several Latinos to move to Washington. They came from California. They headed his Cabinet Committee on Opportunities for Spanish-Speaking People. He appointed the first Hispanic treasurer of the United States. And he really brought Latinos into his administration, was the first one to do so. So patronage and appointments was really important.
So there was Nixon, but also Ronald Reagan that mobilized the Latino or Hispanic vote. And as you said, both of them are from California. Reagan was the state's former governor. And so even though popular thought is always characterizing it as this Latino base is predominantly anti-Castro Cubans in Florida, it sounds like the GOP base is actually Mexican and has been in California for a really long time. How did this particular thing come to be?
Yeah, that's right. You know, that was one of the biggest surprises to me when I did my research, and still everyone I talked to about my project said, oh, you must be writing a lot about the Cuban exile community. And one interview I did with a Mexican-American Republican who was in the Ford administration, actually, and canvassed for Nixon in his 68 and 72 campaigns, told me, you know, Cuban-Americans didn't really matter until the 1980s when Ronald Reagan brought them in. And that was a mystery to me at first, but then I realized that, you know, for much of the 60s, Cubans were still kind of focused on U.S.-Cuban relations and still focused on overthrowing Castro. And so Cubans didn't really start to naturalize in large numbers until the mid-1970s. And so Mexican-Americans, they're still today, I mean, the largest Hispanic population. So you can't really have, like, a Latino politics without in some way going through Mexican-Americans. And a group of kind of business-minded, Catholic Mexican immigrants, or the children of Mexican immigrants, came into the Republican Party in the mid-20th century, and they kind of grew the Hispanic Republican movement from California and Texas and other places in the Southwest.
When do we start to see this fissure between the GOP party and Latino voters? I imagine it's driven by the party's increased calls for a border wall and California Proposition 187, which prohibited undocumented immigrants from using non-emergency state services. Can you outline the beginning of the divide here?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly an important turning point. I would push it back maybe a decade and say, you know, the late 70s, early 80s, this is when you start to see the Republican Party going in two different directions. And on the one hand, several Republicans arguing for, you know, a big tent Republican Party that's inclusive of African Americans, Latinos, Native Americans, Asian Americans, and others. And on the other hand, this kind of nativist wing of the party that's kind of best represented by folks like Pat Buchanan or the U.S. English movement, which has been trying to pass a constitutional amendment making English the official language of the United States. And this is when you have the Republican Party kind of moving in different directions. That's when Hispanic Republicans start to feel alienated from the Republican Party. But I think it's important to note that even as the Republican Party tacked right on immigration and border issues, by the 1990s, Hispanic Republicans had developed considerable loyalty to the party. And I think that partially explains why support for the Republican Party has been so durable, even though the party has shifted.
You brought up the Catholic factor. And we have always heard this narrative that Latinos are more likely to lean conservative because of a significant population of Catholic folks. Mm-hmm. You've said there's no natural way for Latinos to vote, that people are not innately more Democrat or Republican. And yet both parties seem to utilize this line of thinking in their voter engagement efforts. Can you say more on what that looks like, and why do we do this?
Oh, boy. These are big questions and really get at the heart of the matter. I mean, both parties have argued that Latinos are natural Democrats or natural Republicans. I mean, they've, of course, done this to try to gain some partisan advantage. But I think what it ultimately does is, in some ways, take Latinos for granted. And part of why I wanted to write the book is to kind of portray Latinos, whatever their political background, as serious political actors with deeply held political beliefs that don't change just because someone calls them a natural Democrat or a natural Republican. I just think that it fundamentally underestimates their greatly diverse political beliefs. I think when people talk about Latinos not being a monolith, I think what they're talking about primarily is their Puerto Rican or Mexican American or Cuban national background. But I think that those national groupings, that's just the first thing you can say about the diversity among Latinos. I think they come from different class backgrounds. They come from different countries with different histories of immigration and relating to the United States. Some have light skin, some have dark skin. Some are religious, some are not. Some serve in the military, mm-hmm. some serve, you know, they're just greatly diverse. And there are ways of talking about the Latino vote in Texas or Arizona or Florida. But whenever you get down on the ground in those communities and start talking to people about their political beliefs, the picture just becomes so much less clear.
So as we move forward and Latino Hispanic voter power grows, what do you think parties need to do to make sure they represent this growing electorate?
I think the first thing to say is that they shouldn't come around to engaging Latino voters only in the weeks or a couple of months before an election. I think Latino political strategists, Latino voters have always been frustrated when candidates only first reach out to them after the political conventions or during Hispanic Heritage Month. There were reports this summer that, you know, more than half of Latinos reported having not been contacted by either campaign as late as July or August. But I think the most successful models for reaching out to Latinos, encouraging their support, developing their loyalty, comes when you establish relationships with them early and often, even when you're not looking for their votes.
That's Geraldo Cadava, author of The Hispanic Republican and professor of history at Northwestern University. Geraldo, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.